I have a question, as I often do, because I want you to think. What is your greatest fear? What do you think that man's greatest fear is? Humanity. Any idea?
The Lord's coming soon.
He is coming soon. Amen. That is
but
true.
That doesn't fear me. That doesn't make
you don't
me.
Fear that though, do you? What do you fear? I mean, really, at the core of the matter, people fear a lot of things. Some people fear snakes. Some people fear spiders. Some people fear the dark. Some people are afraid of heights. Some people are claustrophobic and are afraid of being closed in. Some people fear failure. But at the very core, when we search our soul, I think every person fears being alone. Without any comfort of relationship, they fear rejection. They, as a human being, we all desire to be included. We all desire to be validated. You know, there are, with some sense of belonging to something, there are groups in this world and individuals that have been rejected. Ostracized. They've been set aside and dismissed. And now you can see groups of people in our society that just want to be accepted. And really, it seems like collectively, humanity is crying out to someone, love me. Accept me. Let me belong. Because, think with me for a minute. You teachers know exactly what I'm talking about. When kids are ridiculed by their peers, it normally brings out two different responses, one of two responses, maybe both. They either retaliate or they self-destruct. Don't they? They'll either get mad and get even, or they'll crawl into a box and hide and shut themselves off because no one, they don't belong. They've been told they don't belong. And they'll do almost anything to belong to something, even if it's different than the ones that they want to belong to. Kids cry out for attention, don't they? Whether it's good or bad. Some kids will do good things to have their parents praise them. Or if their parents don't pay attention to them, they'll do something bad, even if it's resulting in a spanking, because to them, they're crying out for attention and love. Because they don't want their parents to ignore them. They'll do anything to get it. Because when you're ignored by your parents, basically you're alone. Humanity wants to belong to something. They don't want to be rejected by anybody. Or at least they want to be included by somebody. Anybody. I believe, I know, there's a reason why this ultimately is man's greatest fear, being alone. Did you know, I know you do, did you know that when God created Adam, He created him good and very good. Amen. And everything that He created, He looked upon His creation and He said, it's good and very good. Well, not just Adam, it was all of His creation. And then He called Adam to name the animals, and God, and Adam named the animals. And I want you to think about this. Adam was, it was just Adam. The only human being on earth in all of God's creation. And all of those animals were paraded in front of Adam to see what he would call them. And he named every one of them. And Adam got to noticing that there's two lions, there's two giraffes, there's two wombats, there's two grasshoppers, but there's nobody like me. God said, it's not good for man to be alone. Just imagine what Adam was thinking. I want you to think about this too. In that pristine creation before the fall, in Adam's sinless state, there was something that God said was not good. Even though he was sinless and in a sinless world, there was some, I don't want to mean to say that there was something God created that wasn't good. Everything God created was good because God said it was. But the condition that he was in, even in that sinless state, was not complete. That's why it wasn't good for man to be alone, because it wasn't complete. It wasn't that it wasn't good. It was not complete. And so God took a rib from Adam and he made Eve a help meet for him, which meant profitable. Not only was it profitable for Adam, but it was profitable to propagate the human race. Without Eve, there's no reproduction. All the animals had male and female. Adam was just a male. You can't reproduce or propagate the species without a female and a male. Neither one can do it on their own. You understand? That's the birds and the bees. I don't care how you slice it. Man can't propagate without both. So God created Adam and he created Eve. And male and female created he them. And when God took that rib from Adam after he made Eve, he didn't take the rib and put it back in. You know why? It's because he said, these two shall become one. And without Eve, that he's incomplete. And without Adam, Eve is incomplete. Do y'all see that? Yes. And that was good in God's eyes. It's not good for man to be alone. But what happened? God's told Adam, he said, you can eat of all these trees, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat. In the day that you do eat it, that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. That means most assuredly, without a doubt, die. People say, you might say fear death, that everybody fears death. Not everybody fears death, by the way. And in that day, because he did eat the fruit, didn't he? He did eat the fruit. And in that day, he died. What was Adam's first? What was he first? Well, it was two things simultaneously. But what was he?
A man.
He was what?
A man.
Well, he was a man. Okay, what was his attitude after he fell? He was
afraid.
Naked and afraid. That's it. He was afraid. Why? Why was Adam afraid? He wasn't afraid of Eve, was he?
Afraid of God.
That's exactly right. He was afraid of God. Why? Because God rejected him. Because he disobeyed God. And God's true to his promises. He wasn't going to sweep that under the rug. And so Adam hid himself because he was afraid of God. You see what rejection brings? That's the first rejection that we see in the Bible. The first instance of being separated from God and being totally alone. Now, he had Eve. He was together, but both of them were alone without God. They did not enjoy that same experience, that same communion, that same fellowship, that same closeness, that same fellowship that they had with God in their sinless state. They lost that and they were dejected, rejected from the garden. God thrust him out. And in that condition, he was not able to return back to the oneness that they had in the creation. He was without God. God talked to him. You know, God talked to him. He said, "Adam, where art thou?" Do you think God asked him that question because God didn't know? Basically, it's like my kids doing something and me asking them, knowing what they've done, "What have you done?" Because I want them to tell me what they did. So Adam and Eve were naked and afraid. That's the first rejection. And you see the result of that? What's the first thing they tried to do after they hid? They tried to cover it up, didn't they? They tried to cover themselves by sewing fig leaves together. An insufficient covering, which we've talked about many times. You know what the second rejection was? The second rejection was God, when Cain and Abel both brought sacrifices, and God had respect to Abel and his sacrifice, and he accepted his sacrifice, but he had not respect to Cain, and he didn't, neither Cain nor his sacrifice, and Cain's countenance fell. Why did his countenance fall? Because God rejected him and his sacrifice.
Right.
You remember I told you? Rejection brings about one of two responses. You're either going to sulk up in the corner and wither away, or you're going to retaliate. Get mad. Which one did Cain do? He got mad. What did Cain do, though? Who was Cain mad at? He was mad at God, but he took it out on Abel, on his brother. He was rejected by God, and he got mad and killed his brother because he was angry. He was wroth, it says. That means full of wrath. And you follow Cain, and his life was full of wrath the whole time. And his descendants, that same way. Now, there's a lot of rejection. You know, people don't like to think that God rejects things or people. He does. The Bible's full of it. You know, when Israel rejected God. I'm not going to go here. You can if you want. But in 1 Samuel 10 and 19, it says, "And ye," this is Samuel talking to the people, "and ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all your adversities and your tribulations, and ye have said unto him, Nay, but set a king over us. Now therefore present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your thousands." That's Samuel. You remember when Israel, they said, "We want to be like all the other nations, and we want a king to rule over us," because God wasn't good enough for them. And they rejected God. What happened? What happened then? God gave them what they wanted. He gave them a king. And he gave them Saul. I call it a story. It's a great account. It is a story, but it's a true story. And you can see human nature all through this Bible. It doesn't sugarcoat it, folks. Because I like to consider myself a student of human nature. How we respond to being alone. They attributed that a natural king was going to save them, just like everybody else. But Samuel said, "It was God alone that saved you, that delivered you from your adversities and all your tribulations." And how are you going to repay him? You're going to spit in his face and say you don't regard that. You rejected God in wanting a king. So God gave them a king. And he said, "You tell them they're going to smart for it." And he told them all the ways that they were going to smart for it. Be hurt by it. And then God blessed Saul. I mean, he anointed Saul to be king. Samuel anointed him. And then God gave Saul instructions of what to do. He said, "You go in and you take the Amalekites," I believe it was, "you go in and you utterly destroy everything from the king all the way on down to the sheep and everything else. Leave nothing." And Saul didn't do it. He listened to the people. And did you know that Samuel came up and heard, he asked Saul a question. He says, What meaneth this? What am I hearing in my ears? This bleating of the sheep and the lowing of the oxen. They were out there mooing, you know. The oxen were mooing and lowing. And the sheep were going, meh. God had specifically given him instructions to you destroy everything that the Amalekites have. And them as well. And he saved the sheep and the ox when God told him to destroy it. And do you know what was the result of that? Samuel tells Saul, he says in 1 Samuel 15:23, "For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry, because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king." And you know what Saul did after that? I mean, I want you to go and read the whole thing. But you know what Saul did after that? Saul pleaded with Samuel. "Oh, please don't leave me, Samuel. I don't want you to leave me," because Samuel and Saul were close. I mean, Samuel was God's prophet and a king of God's people definitely needs to have a close relationship with the prophet of God. And so he lost that relationship, and Saul said, "Please don't leave me, Samuel. Turn again and let me worship the Lord." And he said, "I'm not going with you, Saul. You lost it. You're out. We're done." And then Saul said some other pleadings and some other things, and Samuel finally, just the very thought of Samuel leaving him alone was too much for the king to bear. He couldn't stand it. He did everything he did. He got on his knees and pled with him. "Please turn again with me and let me worship the Lord. I've sinned." And Samuel did. And he turned again with him. And he worshiped the Lord. But the thought of being alone was so hard. Impacted Saul so much. That it drove him to his confession. "I've sinned." Now I want to turn. You can turn here to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Verse 7. "Then I returned, and I saw vanity under the sun." What is vanity? It's not just a woman or a man looking in the mirror and saying, "Oh, I'm so pretty." That is vanity, but that's not the only definition of that. That's just one example of vanity. Vanity is emptiness. Nothingness. It's vanity. "There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end to all his labor." I want you to get the picture of how this man, what this man's doing. He's working hard, but he has no child and he has no brother. Has no wife. "Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he," that he doesn't say this, "for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good?" See, this is a tightwad, for lack of a better term. This is a miser, if you understand what that word means. He did without. He suffered his own self, just like Ebenezer Scrooge did in A Christmas Carol, if you remember that story. He was so tight, he wouldn't even let Bob Cratchit turn on the heat in the office when it was freezing cold outside, because he was pinching pennies. And why? It's just him, and he's not going to leave it to anybody. And he won't even enjoy it himself. Bad situation. That's vanity. "Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. I want more and more. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave of my soul of good. This is also vanity. Yea, it is a sore travail." So that's one person. You can be alone, and that's vanity. I mean, because if you have this kind of attitude and you don't even enjoy things yourself, you have nothing to share with anybody. You can't leave it to anybody. You're not enjoying it yourself. That's alone, and that's vanity. Now, he says, "Two," y'all listen to this. This is meaty stuff. "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor." Why? Because they share in it. You know, the older I get, this is a real world example. The older I get, I don't like to hunt by myself no more. I don't like to be out in the woods by myself. I mean, it doesn't bother me to be that, but I'd rather not. I'd rather, because that, I mean, sometimes I do like to be alone for a short time, but the reason why I do it is because I want to share the experience with somebody else. I don't want to do it alone. It doesn't mean that much to me anymore. Because they have a good reward for their labor. Listen to this. This is another reason. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth. For he hath not another to help him up. You know, God really meant when he said it's not good for man to be alone, not just in a marriage relationship, but in life. You know, I've heard people say, oh, I wish I was stranded on a desert island. No, you don't. Oh, you might think that you would enjoy the beach, and you might think that you would enjoy a little bit of time alone, drinking coconuts all day long, or drinking coconut milk and eating coconuts and eating fish all day long. But you would drive yourself mad if you were alone, totally alone. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? Y'all have heard me tell the story. Y'all know there was a man that had been going to church, and over time, he kind of started missing. And he missed a little here and there. And then over time, it got to be where he was about missing about as half as much as he was going. And then he began missing more and more. And then it began to be rare that he was present at church. It was a cold winter night. The pastor knocked on his door. And he said, oh, hi, pastor, come in. And the pastor came in, he took his coat off, and he warmed, he sat down there for a while, didn't say anything, was just, they were just sitting in silence. Pastor was up warming himself by the fire. Then he took the poker, and he grabbed a big old red hot coal and raked it out alone by itself on the hearth. You know what happened to it? It got cold.
It got cold. Yeah.
It got cold. And after it got cold, the pastor went back up to it, picked it up, and grabbed it, and set it next to the hot coals, and you know what happened to it? It got hot again. Because it was next to the coals. It was in the fire. It couldn't get heat by itself. But it, when it was around other hot ones, it became hot itself. And I'm telling you, if two lie together, they have heat. But if one, how can one get heat if he's all by himself? The church is a fire pit. And it ought to be full of hot coals.
Amen.
And none of the coals ought to want to leave the fire pit. Alone. Did you know? I believe this is the Apostle Paul's greatest fear. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul is talking about in verse 22, to the weak became I as weak. Why? That I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. And I do this for the gospel's sake. Why? That I might be a partaker with you. With you. Not alone. With you. Paul said, I suffer all these things. I've made myself a chameleon so that if you're weak, I present myself as weak. If you're froward, I present myself as froward. I am all things to all men, by all means I might gain, that by all means I might be able to save some. That I might be a partaker thereof with you. He says, I do it for the gospel's sake. Because when you are a partaker with someone, you're with someone. You're enjoying and sharing the same things, aren't you? You're not alone. Now Paul says, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize, so run that you may obtain. And every man that striveth for mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. Paul says, I'm not just running blindly, haphazardly this race. I'm staying on the course that God set. As he talked about in another place. But I so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. I'm not just flailing my arms wildly at an inconspicuous foe or adversary. I'm got my eyes on my foe. And I jab exactly where I want to hit. I'm not just flailing around. Y'all seen cat fights before? Well, boys fight that way too. Sometimes boys fight like this. They just flail all around. Throw haymakers that never connect to anything. Paul says, nope. I've got a better precision to my fighting than that. He says, but I keep under my body. You know what that means? That means I bruise myself. Really, it means I make black and blue. I beat myself up. He's talking about the old man. I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. That means control over it. I beat it down. I beat my natural affections down. My natural lusts, my pride, I beat all that down and keep it in subjection Lest that by any means, here it is, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Rejected. The word is adokimos. Y'all remember me talking about what dokimos means? It means approved. This is the opposite of approved. Y'all remember dokimos was the when they had those coins that they would make, these money changers would go in, and when you cast a piece of money, it obviously had to be shaved, rounded on the end, filed off, so that it was, you know, wouldn't cut you or something. And in Greece and Rome and all that stuff, they had these people, these money changers, that would file that money, and then they would put it into circulation. And the ones that would only, you know, some of them, when you're talking about money, some of them are going to file a little bit more off, aren't they? Number one, so that they can keep it. And they put money, so like if you did a quarter, that it really was about 23 cents worth. Maybe they'd shave 2 cents off of it and keep it and put the 23 cents. They would not be approved. But the man that had the integrity and the character to put the full measure into circulation, and people knew that what he did was approved, they would be calling him dokimos. Paul says, I don't want to be called a dokimos, or disapproved, or rejected. Why? Because I don't want to be a castaway. I don't want to be outside of the fellowship of God's people. I want to discharge my duty, because I certainly don't want to be a castaway from God. I don't want God to reject me. We've already proven that God does that, haven't we? Now, Paul's not going, he's not afraid that he's going to lose his home in heaven, but he is afraid that he will lose the fellowship of the saints of God, but more importantly, he doesn't want God to leave him. You know how God left David, King David? He said, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. The Apostle Paul wants to keep the joy of Christ. And he says, I don't want to be a castaway. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want someone to see me pronounce that I'm high and mighty and so godly that I can't fall. And then as soon as I leave, I start doing all manner of lasciviousness or fulfilling the lust of my flesh, and somebody find me out and it be found out that I'm a hypocrite, and they cast me away like a dirty garment. You know, that's one of my greatest fears.
Castaway?
Yeah. I don't want to be a castaway. I don't want to be a castaway from you. And I don't want to be a castaway from God. You know, this reaches so many things, because you remember that man that Paul told the church to exercise church discipline on because he was, I'm just going to say it because it's Bible, he was doing things that heinous. He was lying with his father's wife. Now, it wasn't his mother. It was his father's wife, his stepmom. You think that still goes on today? Sure does. Sure does. What would you do if something happened in this church like that? What would you do? As a church, you would dismiss them from fellowship as you ought to while they were doing it. But listen to this. Second Corinthians chapter 2. Paul wrote in the first Corinthians, the letter, that first letter that he sent him, he said, you, a little leaven, leaveneth the whole lump. You got to get them out. And they did. But you know what? When he wrote the second letter, he told them this. In verse 5. But if any have caused grief, he hath not grieved me, but in part, that I may not overcharge you all. Sufficient to such a man is this punishment, which was inflicted of many. The church at Corinth dismissed him from fellowship as instructed by the Apostle Paul, because they understood that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. And if you get the leaven out, the lump will remain as it should. But Paul says that this punishment that you inflicted of him was sufficient. So that contrarywise, meaning if you don't restore the man, so that contrarywise ye ought rather to forgive him and comfort him, lest perhaps such an one should be swallowed up with overmuch sorrow. Wherefore I beseech you that ye would confirm your love toward him. And he says, for to this end also did I write, that I might know the proof of you, whether ye be obedient in all things. To whom ye forgive anything, I forgive also. For if I forgave anything, to whom I forgave it for your sakes, forgave I it in the person of Christ. Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. What's one of his devices? Hypocrisy is one of his devices. One of his devices is non-forgiveness. One of his devices is pride. One of his devices is Phariseeism. Now, Paul didn't say, oh, he's having his brother's wife, it's okay, we'll just sweep it under the rug. No. He said, you inflict the punishment of dismissal from fellowship for a while, but do you know that the whole purpose of church discipline is not to cut them off forever? The purpose of church discipline is restoration back into the unity of the church, back into the fold, for the black cold coal to come and be hot again with all the other coals. That's the purpose of church discipline. Why? Because it's not good for man to be alone. It's not good for man to be alone. Because if you're alone, guess who talks to you?
Yourself.
Yourself and Satan. It's a Satan's playground is when you're alone. When you're alone, do you know how much Satan can talk to you and get in your head?
He tries.
And he's good at it. He's good at it. But you know what? There's some other good things too. I'm glad that I'm married. I'm glad that I have friends. I'm glad I have fellowship with you all. I don't like to be alone. But you know what? Even if I was, Brother Greg, I got some good news. Did you know that Jesus said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you?
You're never alone if you believe in God.
Amen. Because it's not good to be alone. And God knows that. And Jesus says that I'm never going to forsake you. God said, I'll never forsake you and I'll never leave you. And if He never leaves you, then that means you're never alone. Now I'm just getting started. All right, John 14 and 15. I'm not really. I mean, I am. John chapter 14. Jesus says, if you love me, keep my commandments. Be obedient. Because disobedience, it'll bring rejection at some level, won't it? And you might be naked and afraid. If you love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and He shall give you another Comforter, that He may abide with you forever. So even if you're don't have that many physical, social, emotional relationships with human beings, the Spirit of God will abide with you forever. If you're born again, if you're God's child, that Spirit will abide with you forever. So you might be alone in this world, but you will never be lonely. There's a difference. Did you know you could be in a crowd of people and still be lonely? But not alone? Sometimes you can be alone but not lonely because the Spirit of God abides with you forever. He promised it. Remember we talked about faith and that God always makes good on His promises? He's not like me. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it seeth Him not, neither knoweth Him, but ye know Him, for He dwelleth with you and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. I love that. He didn't say, you're going to come to me. He said, I'll come to you. Yet a little while and the world seeth me no more, but ye see me, because I live, ye shall live also. At that day ye shall know that I am in my Father, and ye in me, and I in you. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me, and he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him. It means you're not alone. It means you're not alone. I didn't even really begin. I want you to read John chapter 17. This being alone and this fear of being alone carries a lot of other things, because it's a breach of relationship, isn't it? When you're alone, there's a breach of relationship. What does that mean? That means for the relationship to be restored, there's got to be reconciliation. How does that happen? God does that. God does that. I pray for this church. I pray for you individually. I pray that we're a blessing to someone this week. And I want you to remember the promise of God. He said, I'll not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. So if we do see someone that feels alone, let's encourage them. Let's not just dismiss, reject, and disregard. Let's encourage them in the right things, not the wrong things. Let's let them know that we love them. And so fulfill the law of Christ. May the Lord bless you, is my prayer. If doors of the church are open for reception of members, should any have the desire to come and present themselves for church membership today, may the Lord bless you and keep you this week.